Hey, fam, I'm Jada Pinkett Smith, and this is the Red Table Talk podcast. All your favorite episodes from the Facebook Watch Show in audio, produced by Westbrook Audio and iHeartRadio. Please don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
I've been feeling very stressed. Very stressed.
You've been feeling stressed? What?
Yeah. Just thinking about this conversation today, being so concerned about choosing the right words, saying the right thing,
right,
but still being able to speak
authentically.
Authentically.
I get it. This is a really tough subject. Here's the hard truth. There is real animosity between blacks and Asians, and that is rarely talked about.
Brazen attacks against Asian Americans.
The man walked up and started hitting her in the face.
We want to warn you, the videos are graphic.
The recent surge of hate crimes against Asian Americans.
I've seen my grandma get yelled at. You're Asian, so you're a virus.
Has illuminated a painful divide between the black and Asian American communities.
You see my skin as dirty.
Asian people just want to hang out with Asian people only.
Anti-blackness is rooted in our culture. It's very subtle, but is very deeply rooted.
Reports of blacks attacking Asians have fed the tension that goes back decades. In 1991, a black 15-year-old named Latasha Harlins was shot and killed by a Korean grocer during an argument over a bottle of orange juice. The store owner was convicted of voluntary manslaughter, but got no jail time.
We want justice!
When justice wasn't served, outrage exploded, fueling the LA riots. The recent increase in social injustices has called for a racial reckoning for black and Asian Americans.
My perspective is the fact that we're both minorities. I feel like obviously we come from very different cultures, but it's hard for me to believe that other things could get in the way of us having a common ground.
I guess what I need to understand is, where does their animosity for us come from? Because that's what it feels like. It feels like that they have come into our communities,
right,
taken over our stores, taken over the hair and nail industry, and really blocked us from being able to thrive in that industry,
mm-hmm,
because we're coming into those stores.
Right.
You know, we're getting our hair and nails done. And what are they giving back to the community?
Right.
And when we come into those environments and patronize their businesses, we're not even treated with respect and kindness.
Yeah.
I've had some very volatile and passionate discussions with family members and friends. And most of my friends feel like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't have the bandwidth or the interest,
right,
because they don't care about us.
Right.
And they don't treat us with respect. So I don't care about anything that they're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm worried about what's happening with my people, you know, because we have our own struggle.
Yeah. And that's the majority. That is the majority. You're right.
So it's very difficult for there to be any real concern. I don't even feel like they want our help.
Right.
Now, I may hear something different from the scholars.
Right, right,
but from
right.
the average person,
right,
do they care?
Right.
Are they interested
That's
in
a
relationship with me? I just had an experience in the airport where I'm standing in line waiting for coffee, and I had a whole conversation going. A white man my age,
mm-hmm,
came behind me, stood in line. We started having a conversation. A young couple in front of me, white, had a conversation. I've never had an Asian person come up to me that I didn't know to start a conversation,
mm-hmm,
to speak to me, to give me eye contact in any way.
I feel like that's also a cultural thing, mm-hmm, as well, Gam.
It is cultural, but when I go on vacation and I go to a foreign country, I make it my business to try to be conscious of the culture there,
mm-hmm,
so that I can act accordingly.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're owed some of that when you come to our country and you start businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That's just even good business practice, to treat your patrons with respect and care.
Right.
Like, that's just common sense.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
But we don't feel like we get that. And I also recognize that it's a very limited exposure that we have,
yeah,
with the community. They're so separate. That's the only interaction that we really have.
And the cultures are so drastically different.
Yeah.
That's what I've come to understand. But I hear you. I think there's a lot of misunderstandings culturally.
Yeah.
The biggest misconception is that Asian is just Asian. You know,
yeah,
it's like Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Filipino. Like, you just throw them all in one.
But they're all so different.
So different. Yeah, just various cultures, right?
Yeah, but it's difficult to distinguish one from the other sometimes, too.
Not if you pay attention.
Yeah, you gotta
Not if you pay attention.
For me, it's the feeling of, or the lack of reciprocity.
Right.
And it's a feeling that, like, I'm not going to go out of my way to support and help someone if I don't even have the feeling that they even want my support.
Well, here's the thing, and I hear you, and I think one of the biggest misconceptions that we have in this fight as a whole is that it's about this reciprocity situation, right? And I get that. I totally understand that. And of course, we want to feel as though there's some exchange, but at the end of the day, what we can't allow is hate of any kind
to survive,
to exist.
I hear this conversation
endlessly.
They didn't do that, so why should I have to do this? And they didn't do that, so I did this. And it's really hard because we do feel hurt. And we
feel neglected.
Exactly.
And we feel overlooked and we feel not seen. I get all of that. And that's what makes it so difficult because I understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also know there's nothing in the world that makes a woman 65 years old in New York City from the Philippines getting beat up by a man and nobody helps. That
right.
makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Hate is hate.
I agree.
Okay.
And I think people feel terrible about that.
Yeah.
But I just don't feel like, you know, there's no real, there's nothing in us that makes us stand up and feel like we really want to come to...
Well, here's the thing. Then why should we expect that from white people? Because that's how white people feel. White people feel like, that's not my problem. That's your problem. Okay, yeah, so we brought you guys over here. Okay, whatever, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You figure it out. That's on you. That's exactly how white people feel about our struggles.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I'm saying.
It's a cycle. Like, it's the same.
It's the cycle. And I get it. I listen. It's like we're asking you to care because
we're human and we have
out of compassion for humanity.
Exactly.
I understand in the community what makes it so difficult that we are tired. We are tired of always having to put it aside,
right.
Take the high road, all that. So when we decided to bring this intense topic to the table, there were two people we wanted to have here. Both have devoted their careers to taking on tough subjects.
Award-winning journalist Lisa Ling is fighting on the front lines to stop Asian hate. Lisa and her family have received numerous death threats since the increase of hate crimes on the AAPI community. One of the smartest people I know, Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, is a leading voice on Black history and culture. This ordained preacher, professor, and author of 7 New York Times bestsellers is known for breaking down difficult topics.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. This is a really tough subject.
And a tough time.
Yeah. And so we just wanted to get some education just around the tensions between Blacks and Asians. How did it get this way?
Yeah.
One of the first things any immigrant group learns when they come to America, who the bottom of the totem pole is.
Yes.
I don't care who you are. Black people, right? The darker people are at the bottom of the totem pole.
When immigrants come over here and they do, they recognize this structure, right? Where whites are at the top and blacks are at the bottom.
Yeah.
So often when immigrants from Asia come to this country with nothing, they have this aspiration of being able to achieve some semblance of the American dream.
Yeah.
And what does that look like?
Yeah.
It looks white, right?
Yeah.
But everyone is being dehumanized, right? Because everyone is trying to rise up that ladder.
Yeah.
We're in Los Angeles. And we think about Latasha Harlins, right? That was a touchstone. Like, that's what they do to us. The history of anti-blackness within Asian communities, that along with the Rodney King, this was a signal moment.
I don't know a single Asian person who isn't horrified still to this day about that case.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I truly don't.
And that's the thing, to understand that the people it horrified are not just black, and the people it horrified are many Asian brothers and sisters who saw that, who felt that it was a horrible misrepresentation of who they are as a people. And here's the thing. The so-called negative thing that any particular group does is seen as representative of that group. Black people have a right to feel hurt and injured by the fact that everywhere in this world to be darker is to be dehumanized, and there's no question about that, which means that we should be especially careful not to reproduce that same hurt to other groups.
Yes.
When that tension starts to brew, our communities aren't the ones that are benefiting from it.
Not at all. For Black people to be demonizing Asian brothers and sisters with the Wuhan flu, the Chinese flu, who wins? White supremacists. So it pits us against each other.
Right. And that exact idea of pitting minorities against each other is the most perfect path towards domination.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
white supremacy is what? We're not talking about individual white brothers and sisters. We're talking about the conscious or unconscious belief in the inherent inferiority of some and the superiority of others.
And I think that's the thing. I think there's a lot of people in our community specifically who don't recognize the white supremacy construct that we're falling into, you know? That's the thing. Like how you just broke that down.
Right.
How you've been breaking it down. It's like, I didn't really have the words, you know what I'm saying?
I meant the red table. I got to bring my A game. You understand what I'm saying?
Like, that's exactly it.
But it's got power. That's what's ruining and ruling us.
And it also is stoking fear amongst people whose livelihood and lives and the way they've always known things feels threatened. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about this period right now. And white people are starting to recognize, wow, I really had no idea.
What's interesting, though, the ingenuity of white supremacy is it don't matter who's in control as long as the system is operating.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you could have a Black head of Department of Housing under the Trump administration, and you still gonna have white supremacist ideology being pumped through that Black mouth and body. Mm-hmm. The ingenuity of white supremacy is it doesn't demand a white body to be efficacious and effective.
That's a very important point. Lisa, have you personally felt the surge of animosity that is happening?
I have been teased and been on the receiving end of aggressions my whole life, but over the last year, the level of vitriol and just the hatred that is expressed has been really unnerving. I mean, even people wishing harm on my own children because we brought the coronavirus to this country. So absolutely, but it kills me that so many of our Asian elders and mothers and children are being attacked so senselessly for no reason. Mm-hmm.
At this table, we always want to hear from you. So check this out. Recently, a Stop Asian Hate post on our Red Table Talk Instagram and Facebook page confirmed this deep divide. We received so many comments and responses like these that relate frustration, anger, and pain.
I'm supposed to care about Stop Asian Hate. I'm supposed to care about what's happening to Asian people. They're rude, they're disrespectful, and they're racist, if you ask me. Rushing us out their stores, following us around, watching us every move like we're gonna rob the whole store. But they don't mind taking them Black dollars, and they didn't mind opening up these businesses in our neighborhoods. They have never helped me and mine do anything. So why would I jump on some Stop Asian Hate bandwagon?
That was the majority.
Right.
And it was so deep that there were lots of posts that had to be pulled. That's how offensive they were.
How would you address that?
You know, I think it's really easy to say things like, well, this Black person did something to me in this nail salon, or this Asian person disrespected me. Those are individual experiences, and that can't categorize
the whole
stereotype.
That's not the totality. They are so diverse. I mean, there are over 20 different Asian cultures living in this country with different languages, different traditions. And frankly, not only do I know very little about being Thai or Laotian or Cambodian or Vietnamese, I don't even know the first thing about being Chinese, because I'm not from China, I'm from America.
And this sister, bless her heart, I don't doubt her heart. I don't doubt the fact that this is her experience. I don't want to diss Black people who have been mistreated. I'm not saying there are no rude Asian people in stores that have done exactly what this woman said. Mm-hmm. But here's the question.
Right.
I would say this to Black people. When we say this, and God bless this woman, right, white folk been saying that forever about us.
Yep.
You know, I don't mind, but these Black people, they're just rude, they're loud, You can't get them to work on time. They never come prepared. They always got excuses, on and on and on.
Is that a large enough sample size for you to determine this is the fundamental characteristic of Asian brothers and sisters? Or if we're gonna get real ugly about it, how many black people have stolen from them that their attitudes have been misshapen by the behavior of certain black people?
Of a few.
And you're gonna go, wait a minute, most black people ain't ripping you off. Most black people, right? So I would ask them, I understand your pain, but don't draw conclusions based on your limited sample size, because white folk have been doing that forever.
And
Jim Crow is based on that.
Right. Yeah.
White supremacy is based on that. You don't want all black people being judged by your knucklehead cousin.
Right.
How do you get beyond that when that is the only experience that you have? When your experience is so limited? Because that's real too. Experience interacting with the Asian community is so friggin' limited.
Yeah. White folks are saying the same thing. We don't know no Negroes. They don't live next door to us.
Right.
All I see is what I see on a rap video. Mm-hmm. But I tell people, read a book.
Read a book.
Go Google.
Right.
Look at some darn YouTube. It ain't that hard.
Hard to find, right.
So you are ignorant, but you're responsible for your ignorance.
Right.
So when we say we don't have any experience with, you know, hey, the only Asian person I know is the person, you know, in the nail salon and like, well, then we don't want black people judged by what we think happens with the black person at McDonald's.
Exactly.
And white folk go, do you want them fries? We ain't got no fries. If so-called Pookie and so-called Ray Ray is the litmus test for how people judge. Now, my point is, stereotype is a lazy person's way of engaging the other.
Right.
So have a more complicated, nuanced perspective. We gently encourage her, ma'am, just like I do with white folk, when I challenge them with humor or acerbic, intense rhetoric aimed at their colossal indignity, that you got to just say, open up a little bit, open your heart. Do you want to be judged by the worst things you've done? Do you want to be judged by how black people have been said to treat white folk? Because I get letters every day, and they're going, you up here talking about this. And I don't deny that these white people have had this experience, that they've seen black people do X, Y, and Z. Right? They're saying, I saw this. This is in my store. I hired this many black people. Every black person I hired acted like this. So they got a sample, too. It ain't scientific, but they got a poll too. So we're going to put their bigoted poll against your bigoted poll. Let's do something different. Let's draw back and see that there's our different experiences, different peoples. And if we judge people based upon the worst of what they do or the worst of how they behave or on one day, have you judged them over space and time? Did you have a conversation with them? Did you talk to them about where they come from? Have you spoken, right? In other words, have you treated them the way you want to be treated? If you want an Asian person to speak to you, have you ever spoken to them? So my point is that when we get into the politics of reciprocity and knowledge, it's not just about read a book. It's not just about know more. I recommend all that. But open up your perspective. Be a bit fair and don't do the same things.
I think we need to have Michael Eric Dyson like pumped into everyone's
It just doesn't sound satisfying to say that to that woman. Get a book and read your history.
But it's also a human problem too, Gammy.
Meet some more people.
Yeah, and I know it's hard, but it's also like, maybe try to expand your heart a little bit and your mind just a little bit.
How about that? You can't reduce the world to your perspective.
Mm.
And yet at the same time, your perspective is so critical of how you see the world. So it is to your advantage to continue to expand.
Okay, but is not the onus on the Asian community to do the same when it comes to us?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely. And I would say the same thing to Asian people who have a myopic view of black people.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, have you taken the time?
Yes.
You know,
I'm glad
you said
that.
When you moved into this community, did you read about the history? Did you get to know people? Did you invest? Did you hire people from the community and give them opportunities?
Right.
I do think it's incumbent upon all of us. I mean, if we don't start functioning that way, this is all headed down a very
a really bad
dark
road.
Path.
And you raise a great point, because part of the investment of the model minority is that it has insulated Asian communities. It helps, but it also hurts. Because that honorary white status allows you to derive a certain kind of benefit from being quiet, from not speaking up, from not making noise.
How open, Lisa, do you believe that the Asian community is to educating themselves around the history of the relationship between black people and Asian people, but just black people in general,
understanding. I do actually think that there's a generational divide in the Asian community. Younger Asians, we're taught black history.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's why I think so many Asian Americans showed up to protest the systemic injustices that have been directed toward black people this summer. So that's why it hurts when we hear Asian people have never stood up for us.
Right.
So many younger Asians are like, where is this animosity coming from?
There's a history, and there's a reason for it.
If our main goal is to really have some harmony, we have to stop like inserting ourselves right back in that cycle.
Right.
And I'm not making excuses for Asian people, but often there are language barriers and there are cultural differences. And as a whole, Asians aren't the most communicative people around. My husband, he's Korean American, and his parents didn't even tell him I love you until he was in his 40s. So that's what we're working with here.
Right.
So
typically they're just not warm and cuddly and friendly.
Right. It's not so much that it's not warm and cuddly, it's just not the most communicative. It's not particularly affectionate. But I don't think that Asians not approaching you to talk to you, it's not so much because they're discriminating against you. I mean, I do think there's a cultural piece to it where they're probably not even talking to each other that much, quite honestly. When we talk about race in this country, it's through a certain lens, right? Mm-hmm. It's black and it's white.
Yeah,
right.
Asians have been in this country since the 1500s, right?
Yeah, a long time.
Yeah.
Did you read about Asian history in your textbooks in schools? I mean, I didn't even. When I hear this aversion and people saying, well, Asian people don't stand up for our community, Asian Americans don't even know their own history, you know, because it's not taught in our schools. If you look at Asian American history in this country, we can't compare it to what black people have gone through,
right?
Although some Chinese and some Filipinos were actually enslaved.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the Chinese were the only demographic to ever be excluded from being able to immigrate to this country for decades.
Yep. Right.
120,000 Japanese rounded into camps for years. They lost their businesses. They lost their homes.
I also learned that there were lynchings that happened of
Asian. One of the biggest lynchings in American history happened in Chinatown in the 1800s.
Exactly. And I just learned about this.
Think about Asian brothers and sisters the way white folk think about us, and I think we'd be a bit more compassionate. Toni Morrison said, on the backs of black people, America has been built. Mm. And we know Asian labor, unrecognized, has provided the opportunity for America to be what it is. So here is the tragic irony, that we would come to a place now in 2021 where we're at each other's necks, when indeed what we should be doing is trying to look at the common enemy of white supremacy that is murking all of us.
I've heard a lot of my Asian peers talking about aspiring to this level of whiteness and not wanting to have their original name. Mm-hmm. Like if their parents call them their original name and they have friends in the house, that makes them feel some type of way.
Well, I mean, when you don't know your history, and if whites are at the top, you can understand why you'd want to move in that direction.
100%.
Be an honorary white.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Now, Michael, let me ask you a question. What do we say to black people in the community who feel threatened and feel as though that the presence of Asians in our community are stealing their livelihood?
Why be mad at the Asian brothers and sisters who came here looking for an opportunity? Don't hate the player.
Right.
Hate the game. Why do Asian people have those nail shops? Where could they get them? In the black community. Be mad at white supremacists who deny black people access to the loans to be able to own the shops in their own community. And the game at this point is black people can't get loans. The reason Asian brothers and sisters are owning those shops, because they were able to get loans, right?
Right.
And Asians historically haven't had the opportunities to open their businesses or even live in some cases in predominantly white communities.
Right.
So they end up in communities of color where they're predominantly black people. And when they do open businesses, it's not so much that they, you know, are trying to discriminate against black people.
Right.
This is where they have to open businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And often they don't take the time to understand the historical roots of where they have set up shop. I mean, all they really care about, frankly, is survival.
Yeah. Right. So this is the thing, because I want to make this really clear. You are basically saying that it's the construct of white supremacy that makes it possible that Asians can get those loans before we can.
teach yes. for me. Come teach for me, because you just broke it down.
Right.
You
broke it down better than me. I just want to make sure that it's clear that...
That's exactly right.
The history of black cooperation with Asians and Asian cooperation with blacks is much deeper and more profound than the kind of bitterness and the fracas we see going on right now. Asian people, whether black people know it or not, have been involved in the struggle for African-American freedom from the get-go, from the time that they got here, right? But that history is obscured.
Mm.
And what is put forth is they're disrespectful. They don't like us. We saw black people side with the Philippines in the Philippine-American War.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We saw black folk with the Vietnam War speak out.
And so it is in the history if you read it.
Right.
I mean, heck, the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yes.
Wouldn't be no RZA. Wouldn't be no Method Man. Come
right.
on. The greatest protest movements that we have put forth have always had the participation of Asian brothers and sisters.
For every story of the tension, there are so many stories of solidarity.
Exactly. We don't hear those, though.
I'm not saying they haven't done everything you said, but having said that, are you judging an entire race of people?
Yes.
Hmong, Vietnamese, Chinese, and Korean?
Right.
Based upon your interaction with some Asian folks who treated you like crap. That kind of thing is what we've been fighting against. That's what Martin Luther King, Ella Baker, and Joanne Robinson have been fighting against all of our lives. We got to do better.
So Lisa, I want to bring in somebody you say is one of the smartest people out there. Korean-American writer and Amherst professor, Min Jin Lee.
Hello.
Hi,
Minjin.
Hi. You know, I'm so happy to be here and thank you for that generous introduction. I wanted to be here because I think the Red Table Talk is actually a Korean show. I don't know if you knew that.
I love it. I love it.
And here, let me tell you why. It's a Korean show because it's three generations of women of color. And that is exactly how I grew up. And also, I'm such a huge fan of Michael Eric Dyson. So hello, professor. And Lisa Ling knows how much I love her.
I want to really address the LaTosha Harlan situation because that is a graphic image, but it is a very incomplete image. There's also an image of Yuri Kochiyama cradling the head of Malcolm X when he was assassinated.
Yes.
And that image has been on the forefront of my mind always. We can focus on that one thing in the same way we can focus on all those horrible videos, which the media has been perpetuating to create greater sense of divide.
And for us to buy into the notion that them people came over here and brought that disease and black people attacking Asian people in the street. Now, here's the use of white supremacy.
Mm.
The disproportionate number of people who are attacking Asian people are not black, but it serves the narrative that see these criminalized black people who are out of control.
And we have so many gaps in our knowledge because a white supremacist education prevents us from knowing about each other and ourselves.
It's part of the veil of ignorance because most of us don't really know the history.
Exactly.
And they ain't sharing that history. That's not the part of the story they want us to know.
We need to have solidarity. It's not just because we want to feel good, but because we have 12% African-Americans in this country who can vote. And then we have Asian Americans are just 5%, but we're the fastest growing population of racial minorities in this country. If we have 17%, if we can get most of us to vote together, what can't we do?
No, no doubt, no doubt.
Right. Min, you say that we've been ignoring a major factor in the Black-Asian divide. Can you explain?
Yeah, I really want to talk about this because I come from a working class background. So one out of four Asian Americans in New York City live below the poverty line. Of all the racial minorities in New York City, the poorest people are actually Asian Americans.
Wow.
They're struggling. 90% of Asian American elders have language issues. And that's really important to notify because when we think about the people, let's say in those nail salons who could be rude, some of those people are actually almost like indentured servants. They owe so much money to the people who brought them into this country. And those women who were killed in Atlanta, two of those women live there. Like, nobody wanted them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I ask for compassion, but if you don't feel like giving compassion, that's okay. I get it.
It's true. If you don't have it in you, if you're too exhausted, you feel like you've been fighting this fight, I get it. But before you make such a bold assertion to refuse, just take the time to understand some of those data points that Min Jin just conveyed.
And it's a pretty bold stance to take.
I think so.
Yeah. I guess at the end of the day, it really is about, like, having these conversations.
Do you feel like you got enlightened in a certain way? Because I know I have.
Yeah. Oh, just me too. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I just really, really started listening and thinking about my own limited experience.
And then you hear yourself, don't you?
And I hear myself.
Because sometimes you hear you go like, oh, is that me?
Did I really just say that? But I do understand that we are, as a community, so traumatized right now.
Right.
It's just hard for us to feel that compassion.
These conversations are hard. Mm-hmm. They're painful, but they're so essential. As long as we continue to perpetuate these tensions and aggressions against one another, we will continue to spiral downward.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that's why we need each other. I mean, I need you, and you need me.
Exactly.
And this is a fight that we're all in together.
Yeah.
This is life and death at this point.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. E pluribus unum, out of many, one.
One.
When we do that, we got a much better chance of doing it.
I am getting teary. I'm E pluribus. Yeah. I'm amazed at myself.
Well, yeah, because...
Yeah.
It just seems like such a struggle.
I know, but that's the part to work through. It's a lot of purification in this process, you know?
It really is.
It's going to be ugly.
Yeah.
It has to get ugly before the healing can happen.
Exactly.
Right? Because it's allowing these wounds to be exposed.
Exactly.
And even just like being able to look each other in the eyes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah,
it's very hard. Of, we have, you know, so lifting. Much work to do.
It's a lot, and it's a lot of pain and having to look, you know, in the shadows of our hearts.
Oh, it's
purifying, because at the end of the day, it's just getting closer to love.
Yes, right. That's all we're trying to do.
Yeah, that's it. You know?
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
So I'm all for the
love.
We
need that.
This was a beautiful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Love you.
It's powerful what just happened.
Yes. Really beautiful.
I'm proud to be alive for it.
Yeah. You can come anytime.
Wow.
Great
talk. Man.
You are so incredible.
Oh, so are you, my love.
You guys were.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is
now
great.
I think I know what my next tattoo is going to be. E pluribus unum.
Wow.
I was like sitting here like, that speaks to my values.
It does.
Join the Red Table Talk family and become a part of the conversation. Follow us at facebook.com/redtabletalk. Thanks for listening to this episode of Red Table Talk Podcast, produced by Facebook Watch, Westbrook Audio, and iHeartRadio.